Read this fascinating story on CNN about what retailers are doing with this clothes you return. I guess they're finding that things are a bit too expensive to have a warehouse to store returns, and they're basically just telling people, okay, you don't want it, we'll give you your money back, but we don't want the stuff back. You can keep it. Well, which opens up a whole other can of problems for them, probably, with potential for fraud and all of that stuff, but they clearly think the risk is worth it. Bruce Winder's on the line, retail analyst and author of Retail Before, During, and After COVID-19, and he was great enough to join us this morning. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Hey Matt, how's it going?
I'm doing well. I mean, you follow this closely, so maybe you weren't as surprised as I was, but it's just an interesting idea to try to keep costs down here.
It is. It started a little while ago, actually. I think it was kind of a year ago, where some U.S. retailers started, piloting and considering having customers sort of keep things instead of bringing them back or sending them back through postage to the retailer. And it's very unorthodox. And to your point earlier, it does set some very odd precedents and opens them up to fraud in a number of areas. But the cost of shipping product around backwards, never mind forwards, but backwards, is astronomical. And the handling costs that retailers pay, in many cases, eats into their entire profit of their online sales.
Yeah, and we're at a point now where customers just aren't going to deal with paying for the shipping costs, right? Like we're at a point where people expect it to be free.
We are, and we're at that tipping point, so to speak, to quote Malcolm Gladwell, we're at the tipping point where consumers are like, okay, I'm tired of paying for anything to send it back. Having said that, Zara recently introduced a charge of $1.50 in some markets for to return goods. But yeah, it's just one of those table stakes. First it was free shipping, and now it's this. So consumers are very, it's a very competitive environment right now, especially with recessionary winds blowing around. And consumers don't want to pay for that, and retailers don't want to pay for it. So the whole idea is get rid of the charge altogether.
You're the perfect person to talk to based on the book that I mentioned, Retail Before, During, and After COVID-19. How much did the COVID pandemic change the way people shop?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, one of the biggest things, obviously, and this is pretty obvious, but sometimes these are the most important trends, is the growth in e-commerce. E-commerce accelerated, went through the roof, doubled in many markets. Now it's sort of growing at a much slower rate. It's kind of flat. But that was one of the biggest differences, is people bought almost everything online, and they got really used to using e-commerce as a way to buy product, even food, grocery. Many people for the first time. So it really sort of opened the door to e-commerce as a major channel of distribution.
Yeah, we were actually just talking about that off air, the fact that I had never ordered groceries pre-pandemic to pick them up. I just thought there's no point in doing something like this. Who would ever want to do
Sure.
it? And I don't do it all the time, by all means, but it really adds a convenience level that many people hadn't discovered pre-pandemic.
It does. Like you pay a little charge for it, or you might pay a little more for the product. But if you're a busy person and time is of the essence, then you know what? You can get things delivered to your home a lot easier. If you want to swing by, you can get curbside pickup. And it really does, in this busy day that we're living in now, it really does add some time back into your schedule.
Do we see a lot of people who just use an actual physical store kind of as a way to, I want to test a product, I maybe want to try it on, and then I'm going to search for it and find a cheaper deal online? I know of some people that do that, but is that a theme that we've actually seen develop?
Oh, massively. That started probably a decade or two ago. And
How
they
do you
call
compete with that if you're an
it.
in-person brick and mortar store?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, an example is Best Buy. Best Buy was one of the companies that was cherry-picked for what they call showrooming, where you do just like you said. What Best Buy started to do is said, hey, you know what? We've got a price match guarantee. So don't go home and order it online. Whatever you see it, we'll match it right now. Buy it right now from us. So they tried to combat it. They also offered some services that online retailers couldn't offer to try to differentiate themselves.
Yeah, it's just kind of fascinating to watch the development of the way things have changed over the last couple of years. And for a lot of these things, they've probably gone to a point of no return, right? Like we're not going to go back to the way we were pre-pandemic or even 10 years ago on a lot of those instances. So you just got to find a way to deal with it, I guess.
Absolutely. We're not going back. I mean, e-commerce is not retreating. It might grow slower over the next few months. But the reality is, like I said, for a lot of retailers is now they've got this giant behemoth that grew so big and they're not really making money on it. When you look at shipping costs and you look at return costs, returns are three times higher when you buy something online than they are through brick and mortar. So a lot of folks are scratching their heads trying to see if they can make money.
So online. Something's got to give. That's not sustainable. And obviously you're seeing the American retailers do what we talked about off the top and just testing out the idea of just telling people not to pick it up. Here in Canada, what are we seeing on that front? I would imagine at times shipping costs are probably higher in this country with just how vast the geography is and how, you know, there's not as many distribution centers. Maybe I'm wrong by that, but I would think it's higher here. Is it?
Oh, you're right. Yeah, you're right. You're bang on. And I haven't heard of anyone trying it in Canada yet, but I'm sure they will. They normally pilot in the U.S. first sometimes. But Canada's a lot more expensive because we have much less lower population density. And we have other terrains and things like that. You know, our geographic distance is more dispersed. So absolutely, it's a lot more expensive in Canada. You also got higher taxes, higher labor, and things like that, too.
The obvious question that you and I both flagged right off the top was, how do you prevent people from just ordering something, then saying, I don't actually want it anymore, I want to return it, and then now they have it for free. Do you have any ideas, just top line, of how that would be prevented? Or do you just hope that, you know, you build that into your equation and say some people aren't going to be honest, but overall it's cheaper than paying for the returns, and you just sort of deal with a small percentage of people that will actually do that?
Yeah, the answer is actually a little bit of both. So they will write up, you know, they'll build some of it in, but what they can use is algorithms and AI, and they can flag someone really quick who's sort of abusing the system. And, you know, retailers and e-tailers aren't shy about sort of limiting someone's access and saying, look, you're a serial returner, so we're going to not let you do returns anymore going forward. So if you want to buy something from us, it's on you. We're not letting you return it. We're not giving your money back. So they can flag people like that and treat them differently.
Is there a retail trend that you're seeing building that maybe we haven't caught on yet? This is one thing that kind of caught my attention. And you talked about the Best Buy thing and online grocery shopping. But is there a trend that you think is about to hit and we'll all realize it that we're not expecting right now?
Well, it's hard to really say because we are probably expecting a lot. But one thing I think that's going to grow a little more is used clothing, used products. I think you're seeing the stigma of that go away and people are watching their money, and you'll probably see, used products in all shapes and forms take off, whether it's through Kijiji or a Facebook marketplace or something, because people have to watch their money. It also has a nice environmental play too, where, you know, the more you can reuse a product, the less you can damage the environment.
Are consumers really environmentally focused? I mean, we've talked obviously about banning plastic bags in stores and all that stuff, but is the demand there, or is the push for that just driven by government regulation or stores hearing that from their customers of, listen, you better be a little better for the environment?
Yeah, great question. And a little bit of both, but consumers have woken up and they're very much, especially younger consumers, are very much, serious about the movement. And I think we all realize now when you see the forest fires, the floods, the temperature changes, the climate issue is real. It's not sort of made up, right? So I think everyone really demands it now. And we're already behind the eight ball. So I think you're seeing both. You're seeing regulators wake up. You're also seeing consumers wake up and say, look, I demand this now.
It's just an interesting theory that got us talking to you in the first place. And I thank you for making some time for us this morning. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it, Matt.
Bruce Winder, retail analyst, author of Retail Before, During, and After COVID-19. It's The Morning Rush. Good morning.